scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, at left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things underway on this hour of Flames Talk. It's the final day of January. It is Friday, January 31st, and this hour of Flames Talk is getting going. It's the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Now, on this Friday night, we're getting the Eric Francis Hour going. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca going to join us. We have a massive Thursday deal between the Flames and Philadelphia Flyers to talk about for a good portion of the hour. Also, if you're listening live, this will kind of be developing through the hour, and maybe in the second part of the hour, Francis and I can get into this, but another massive trade is in the works. JT Miller is on his way to New York from the Vancouver Canucks. So JT Miller to the Rangers, and it is going to be a multi-piece deal on both sides. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on and get you some details as details get made available. Obviously, if you're listening on podcast, you already know what the trade is likely going to look like. But if you're listening live, it's kind of coming at us all while we're talking about it. Francis joins us now. Hello, EF.
How are you, my friend?
Oh, you know, it's been a day, but we're hanging in.
Yeah, that was a night too. That was a day and a night.
Hey, it's funny. You would have been a part of the last time the Flames had an in-game trade with that type of craziness, mm-hmm. going back to January of 2012. So it was a little more than 13 years ago when Rene Bork got traded to Montreal for Mike Camilleri. And, you know, as the game was starting, we were all like, oh, Flames are... Flames are playing. They were, funny enough, playing the Anaheim Ducks that night as well. Blair Jones scored the overtime winner in a 1-0 win. I remember it vividly. I didn't watch a lick of the game, Francis. I did not watch a lick of that game that night, but I do remember being in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge when Blair Jones scored the overtime winner, and for whatever reason, that stuck with me all this time later. But that was the last time that there was a night quite like that one where you're like, oh, yeah, there's a game, and... yeah, I guess they're playing it here. Like, they're playing this game. The only other one would have been Jerome a couple of years later where, you know, we knew a trade was coming. We were just trying to figure out where it was going to be, and it ended up being Pittsburgh instead of Boston, as we all thought it was going to be. But I digress. That was a hell of a Thursday night.
That was. I remember that trade, too, with Camilleri. He called me from the dressing room in Montreal while their game was still going on. To call me to tell me he'd been traded, and to, you know, and then I said, well, give me some quotes then. Like, it was bizarre. He didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know none of us had been through this sort of thing before. So last night was somewhat similar to that. It was interesting fumbling through it on live TV, as I'm sure you did on live radio, as the night progressed and all the speculation and reports were coming in. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it's funny. I said to my little guy, he's 14, and he'd asked me, he sent me a note saying he wanted to know if he should trade so-and-so for so-and-so in his pool. And I wrote back, hey, did you see the big Flames the trade made? And then he wrote back, he had to look it up, and then he looked it up. He said, that's not a big trade. So it's funny because it's a big deal in this city because it addresses a couple of significant needs that the Calgary Flames have had for a while. But in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that big a trade, right? I mean, most people in pools don't have a Joel Farabee or a Morgan Frost on their roster.
Yeah.
But it just fits the little niche that the Calgary Flames have been looking for. And it's a really triumphant day for the Calgary Flames to have finally landed it. Exactly 1 year to the day that Elias Lindholm was traded. I just think the irony is rich in that. That deal just keeps on giving to the Calgary Flames. That was a hell of a night. And you know, before we really get into it, like, a lot of people have asked me the same sort of question, like, how is this so one-sided? Like, what am I missing? is what a lot of Flames fans have kind of been asking me. Like, what are we missing? Why would Philly do all this? Well, this is a major salary dump for Philadelphia, first of all. Farabee is someone that they wanted to kind of get out from under with 3 years left at $5 million a year. Yep. So, you know, for Calgary, it's not. They got all the cap space in the world. It's worth the risk. But it was a salary dump, and they wanted to continue to accrue draft picks. So that's where they're coming from.
Well, and I also think because they're right now, they're not getting a ton of salary relief like in the immediacy because they're taking on the whole 5.5 of Kuzmenko and Pelche. So it's basically a wash right now. But then when Kuzmenko comes off the books at the end of the season and they don't have a Morgan Frost contract to work with, and they also have the Farabee deal no longer on the books, that's when the cap space really opens up. So it feels like, and the cap's going up pretty significantly for next year, but, and we learned that on this Friday as well, but the actual impact, I think, that's really going to help Philadelphia is the cap space they clear up in the offseason. And I think that's a part of it because I think they determined that neither Frost nor Farabee were going to be in their long-term plans. But and I get it if you're a somewhat cynical member of the Flames fan base right now who's maybe not in love with this trade, you might be saying, well, why, if they're not in the Flyers' plans, why would they be in the Flames' plans? But I guess what I would say is, and I think you'd agree with this, Francis, Craig Conroy's been pretty good, and this pro scouting staff has been pretty good at identifying players who maybe aren't great fit where they are right now, but they identify that they can be great fits on this team. And I like the buzz term. I use it a lot, market inefficiency. And I think that's a little bit what we're seeing again. I think Sharangovich was one that was great in year one. And, you know, maybe the stock has fallen a little bit in year two. Kevin Ball is another example. And he's been an outstanding fit in his first year as a member of the Flames. There's a few others that you can point to as well. And this one, Farabee is having a down year because he and Tortorella weren't on the same page in Philly. Morgan Frost is maybe not exactly where he and other people think that he can be in terms of his impact because, again, maybe not seeing eye to eye with the head coach in Philadelphia. Well, it's a completely different situation with the Flames. You've got a fresh start. You've got a team that wants you. You've got a team that has been aching to bring in a little bit more offense and a little bit more stability in their top nine forwards. So I think there's a great opportunity for this to be good for both sides in that the Flyers didn't see them going forward with these two guys. Okay, but that doesn't mean they'll be bad fits with the Flames. In fact, I think there's a lot to suggest that this could be a really good fit for Calgary because of the needs that these two players are filling.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as of last night, Morgan Frost lined up as their number one center. Like, they've been rotating. I watched their lineup quite a lot. Like, Noah Cates has been their number one center for a little while. Couturier, not as much this year. You know, like, it's just kind of a rotating door, and they can't seem to find a guy who can anchor that top line. Morgan Frost here is going to be asked to be a middle six center. Like, you know, I would be shocked if tomorrow they don't start with Farabee, Frost, and Sharangovich on the third line. And if that's a fit, if that can work out, because those two guys, I spoke to both of them today, and they've played together many, many times for a lot of years. So there is, theoretically, there would be chemistry there. You know, if they mesh with Sharangovich, that's a hell of a third line. Three guys who have all scored 20 goals in the league. I know Frost has only had 19, but let's just round up. So, you know, I think that you've got a situation where you're not asking them to be a top line guy like they were in Philly. And listen, Ryan Huska is not John Tortorella, and I'm not blaming Tortorella, but it's an age old story that when a player gets traded out of Philadelphia, everybody says, well, he didn't quite see eye to eye with Tortorella. And I asked Farabee about that today, and he said, well, you can't really, he says, I don't know anybody else in the world like Tort, so I'm not really sure how I could compare Huska to Tortorella because nobody compares to Tortorella. And, you know, I don't know if that's a diplomatic way of saying he didn't like him or if he did like him. But either way, they don't have to deal with each other anymore. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting moving forward. Now, one of all the different things I want to talk about with this trade, one thing is really interesting to me that I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Craig Conroy came out and said last night after the game that all this started yesterday morning, which is, that's kind of mind blowing that a deal of this like this could come together in one day. But he said it was originally just going to be a one player deal. If assuming that's Morgan Frost, because he's the whole yes. reason why this trade happens. He's the linchpin. If it's just a one player deal, what do the Calgary Flames have to give up to get Morgan Frost? Because in my opinion, I think it's Morgan Frost for a second rounder, and that's the end of the story, and the deal is done. But when you throw in all the other ones, like Calgary threw in a couple of, I hate to say this, but kind of spare parts, and the Flyers got rid of some salary. Like, you could see how it just kept adding up and making more and more sense for everybody. So my question is, if it was just a one-player deal for Frost, who are the Flames, or what are the Flames sending back?
I wonder if it would have just been Frost for a second and maybe Kuzmenko. That's kind of what I can see that.
And honestly,
I do think that it evolved big time as time went along. I think Pelche was added late or later on. I mean, obviously, because he started the game and Kuzmenko didn't. there's your Sherlock Holmes moment of the evening from Mr. Steinberg. But no, I have a feeling that we were talking about Kuzmenko and a second being on the table for Frost and maybe some salary retention when it comes to Kuzmenko to make things work. And then all of a sudden it started evolving from there and turned into what it turned into. So, I'm kind of with you in terms of, like, they wouldn't have scratched Kuzmenko unless they felt like he was going to be a part of this deal.
Yeah.
So the asset that the Flyers would have been looking for is that second round pick and maybe see what they can turn Kuzmenko into, knowing that he's got some history with Michkov, and there's some other Russians on that team, and maybe you can get a little bit of offense from Kuzmenko down the stretch, although I am curious to see how that fit with John Tortorella ends up working out. And then all of a sudden, it kind of turns into a little bit more, and now, you know, the Flyers eager to get rid of, I don't like using the term get rid of, but, you know, they were trying to get out from under the salary of Farabee, and maybe there wasn't the fit going forward. And the Flames were happy to start talking about another guy that I think can really, really help this team and give them a shot in the arm offensively. And they don't care that he's got 3 years at $5 million left. And if Farabee can be a 45 to 55 point player over the next couple of seasons on this deal, the Flames will be happy to have that as a $5 million cap hit.
Yeah. Now, I just wonder if you say Kuzi you thought was in from the beginning. I just don't know, like, they were really willing to take on, you know, all that extra salary cap, you know, all that salary with Kuzi at 5.5.
I had heard initially there was some retention, maybe that came off the table as the deal evolved.
Yeah. Oh, good. But anyway, I think it was a very savvy trade for both sides, you know, but in particular in Calgary, I see why it's so well received. I mean, I certainly think that it was another feather in Craig Conroy's cap for sure.
Well, and again, I mean, it fills the most important need that they had for the time being, and that is a third center. And I don't want to say number three center, because who knows how they end up getting deployed, but it's a third center and a third natural center to fill out their top nine, because as good as Zary had been, mostly a winger in the NHL. As much as Sharon Govich has tried, still a better winger. As much as they really wanted to see if Pospisil could make it work, he's a better winger right now in the NHL. Well, Morgan Frost has been a center his entire career. He's their best faceoff guy now. You've got another center iceman that you can really count on when it comes to the penalty kill. Maybe you can ease back a little bit on the face-off and defensive responsibilities that you're putting on Michael Backlund right now. Like, Michael Backlund is, like, the face-off numbers from Backlund and Kadri to the rest of the team are rather, there's a rather large discrepancy there. Maybe you can start to trim that gap down a little bit, and you feel like maybe you can have another all-purpose line with Frost centering. And it's funny, you say you'd put Frost and Farabee together. I get that. I still am looking for the best or a better fit and a longer-term fit on the top line. And just knowing what scouts say about Farabee, what I've seen from Farabee, he's an offensively creative player. He is extremely dangerous off the rush. I think there's a really good potential for him playing with Huberdeau and Kadri. And if it's me, that's where I'm putting Farabee immediately, because Jacob Pelche was there before. Well, he's no longer a member of the team. Martin Pospisil was there before that, and it hasn't really worked for a number of weeks. You've got this open spot to put a brand new offensively gifted player into the lineup. I would be really intrigued starting Saturday night against Detroit to see Farabee on that top line.
Well, and it's all about trying to empower these guys. And, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say both of them are going to get more minutes than they were getting in Philadelphia, and certainly going to be treated as more coveted pieces moving forward. I mean, they're the new kids. So you're always trying to bring them in and give them this land of opportunity. They both said to me today that they both spoke to Conroy and the coach very briefly, but they didn't get into how they were going to be used. But the bottom line was both the GM and the coach made it very clear to them, like, we highly covet you two guys, and we see you as important pieces moving forward. I guess you're going to say that to anybody, but I think that can go a long way. Both guys admitted that they were probably ready for a fresh start. You know, whatever the situation was in Philadelphia, the team wasn't working. Whether there were battles with the coach, whether they were not slotted properly, they're not playing with people they wanted to play with or felt they meshed with, whatever the situation, it wasn't working in Philadelphia for either of them. So they both felt like, you know, a fresh start is exactly what they are, you know, would need. And man, it's just going to be so interesting, isn't it, when Connor Zeri comes back? I mean, he's been playing so well up the middle. You can't fathom that they'd move him out of the middle, but he was also so darn effective on the wing last year, that maybe that's where you put him back if Frost is playing well. These are options that they didn't have before that are exciting, interesting quandaries they'll have moving forward.
Good and, problems and by the to way, have, first of but, all. Go ahead.
By the way, I just wanted to add, Joel Farabee, there was some question last night, does he play the left wing, does he play the right wing? He's a left shot, but he says he's played both pretty much equally. And so he doesn't care where he plays. So to your point, if he does want to start on that top line on the right side, then that would be a fit that he'd be very comfortable with. And I also, you know, I'm not sure that I was – he's a big penalty killer too. He really takes a lot of pride in his penalty killing. And he's also got a little bit of grit. The penalty minutes might not show it, but the last time they played, I don't know if you remember, him and Pospisil had something going on. And he was kind of chasing Pospisil all over the rink at one point. And I asked him about that today. And Farabee said, yeah, I played against him at the Worlds and I did the exact same thing, chasing him all over the place. I'm pretty happy now that he's on my team and we don't have to do that anymore.
Number 76 can be a bit of a menace, eh?
Yeah. Yep.
It's the other thing, and it's I'd be curious here. Perspective on this, but it's still two roster players in, two roster players out, and both the players that have been traded away, Pelche and Kuzmenko, were regular players over the last couple of weeks on this team, and yet, despite its two in and two out, it feels like the Flames have infinitely more options when it comes to putting their forward lines together all of a sudden. Like it feels like they had all these imperfect options or non-desirable options. You're like, okay, well, who do we put with Huberdeau and Kadri? And what do we do with our third line? And who should be the third line center? And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, where best would Farabee fit? Like, and okay, we know where Frost is going to be. He's our third center. Who's the best to play with him? And now you've got all these other options. Like, if you're Ryan Huska and the rest of that coaching staff, you probably went from headaches to like, oh, geez, overwhelmed with all these options we've got all of a sudden. That's the way it feels like to me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you're right. And they're better options. I mean, they are. I mean, I know Pelche is wildly popular, but really only in the last 3-4 weeks have we really seen him take to the NHL game and really start to. He looked comfortable, I guess, is probably the best way I would say it. Like,
for the first time, like maybe since his rookie season.
Yeah, and even in his rookie season, I thought the sample sizes were so small that I just saw him making little touch passes and little, you know, very. He just looked comfortable is the best way to put it. Kind of like Adam Klapka suddenly looked last night too. Like that move that he made when he scored that goal, I think that shocked everybody in the stadium, including the netminder who let the goal in, because like no one knew he would drive the net that way and had that those sort of hands. And I love that story that he had that conversation with Jerome Iginla, and it kind of spurred him on last night because he was a man possessed last night. Like, I think I saw, did he have 8 hits?
Yeah.
Eight. And that would be enough. Like, if he just finished the game with 8 hits, they would probably say that was your best game ever in the NHL. But he added a goal. He was dangerous offensively on a couple of occasions. He made a couple great defensive plays. Like, he legitimately was one of the 3 stars of the game last night. Like, he was one of the best 3 skaters on the ice, probably the best 2. So it was him, Wolf, and Coronado were the 3 stars. It was amazing. Anyway, getting off topic, but another thing I just wanted to throw out there, I just checked with Conroy late last night. The second rounder they gave up in this deal was Calgary's second rounder.
Yes.
Not Washington's as part of the Andrew Mangiapane deal. So, you know, I guess you'd prefer to have the Calgary pick as opposed to Washington's, given Washington's probably going to finish first or second in the NHL this year. But either way, doesn't matter. I just retweeted out here, Sportsnet Stats, we put out all the draft picks the Calgary Flames still have moving forward.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, how can you not just look at the body of work that Craig Conroy?
Well, you accumulate picks for a reason, right? Like,
yeah.
Not every pick you accumulate, you go and use. And they made 10 picks last year, and they still have more than their allotment of picks going into this year. They still have a second round pick this year. They've got 2 first round picks this year. And you know what? Have they traded away a second round pick for a pending unrestricted free agent who's 29 years old and may or may not be with this team going forward? I would have been very critical of it. But that's not what happened. They traded away a second round pick as part of a package that brought in 2 guys that perfectly fit their age range and are under team control, and there's a very good chance both could be a part of this team's long term. And that to me has always been the kind of non-negotiable in terms of this season if you're going to make a trade. Yeah, you know what? They've exceeded expectations. Yeah, the fact that they are protecting a playoff spot is significantly higher than we thought they were going to be, but that shouldn't change the big picture. And Craig Conroy has been adamant on the air, has been adamant on and off the record. Anytime that I've spoken with him on or off the mic about, we're not deviating from our 3 to 5 year plan. We're not sacrificing the big picture just for this season. And he said it last night, Thursday night on our postgame show when he sat down with me live. He said, yeah, we're going to try to stick to our plan. And then he stopped himself. He said, no, we're not going to try. We are sticking to our plan. And that's a guarantee that we're not deviating. And so you hear that after a trade that just further underlines it. Like, this is exactly the type of trade that you and I have been talking about since this whole idea of them acquiring a center became a big topic in like late September, early October. And it took a little time and he had to be patient, but he got the deal done and it's still on plan. And I think that's a real significant part of this whole thing.
It sure is. It really is. It's you know, I've done radio coast to coast today. I know you were on there as well. And, you know, everybody,
not as pretty as you, but I did my best.
You were amazing. You were amazing. Very inspirational. And, but it's interesting just talking to hosts in other cities who don't follow the Flames all that closely at all, but even they understand, they get, and they heard the message from Craig Conroy last night, which is, this is for now and for moving forward. And so when you look at it that in that light, which has been made very clear, everybody around the league goes, huh, interesting. Now, the big question everybody asks after, and they asked you, they asked me, is, are they finished? And I asked Craig last night. I said, can we take the day off on the 7th? I really wouldn't mind taking trade deadline day off. Anyway.
You're such a card.
They may nibble around the edges. And listen, there could be an injury between now and then that changes things a little bit too. But you can't sit here and tell me you expect them to do anything of significance on trade deadline.
Maybe not on trade deadline day, but we're still more than 2 months or more than a month away. I do wonder a little bit about them trying to make a similar deal for another defenseman, because they are, and that's not I'm not suggesting that that's going to be an easy thing to do, because get in line if you're a team looking to shore things up on in your top four. But, like, they are one defenseman right now, two with Kevin Ball being hurt, but they're one defenseman short of having a top four. And they've got three guys that you can comfortably say are top four defensemen. I do wonder if they're, if there's an opportunity in a very similar way, like what the Flames just did on Thursday night, to bring in somebody in that same age range who can play left shot D. I think Craig Conroy would be all over it, because that could permanently help stabilize your second pairing or your 1B pairing or whatever you want to call it. Could permanently help stabilize your top four and move Mackenzie Weegar permanently to the right side. Could you find another Kevin Ball in some sort of transaction? That's one that I'm really interested to watch now between now and the trade deadline, which is a little more than a month away.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, what a coup it would be if he could land another trade that serves two purposes.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, I think that the sentiment from the coach and the GM that this was something that the players made happen is a powerful one as well. And I think it's significant. Like, Craig was looking for that center since a year ago today when he traded Elias Lindholm.
Yes.
But the fact that they went out and stuck their neck out to get Farabee as well, that wasn't something that would have happened. It could have been something that could have happened. But if this team is, well, like Philadelphia right now and, you know, just kind of playing out the rest of the season, basically, I'm not sure they get Farabee. Maybe they do. Maybe he still is the perfect fit because he's right in that wheelhouse and they do need scoring moving forward. But I just think that was so poignant to me and predictable that they would say that. But I think it's legit. Like, these players earn this. You can't, as a general manager, especially a guy who played in the league and understands how this works, you can't go into a trade deadline where your team has just surpassed expectations like crazy, but largely with a work ethic that's, you know, one of the best in the league, and not reward them. Like, that's just not what a team person does. And Craig Conroy is all about team as a former captain, and he gets it. So I thought it was pretty cool that he not only did it, but he did it 5 weeks out from the trade deadline. Like, that's significant to get these guys acclimated, ready to go, and then give them an even better chance to make some noise from between now and the end of the season.
Did you get the sense, like I did, that I don't want to say worried, but like one of the things that Craig Conroy kept talking about, whether in that news conference or when he joined me, was, you know, you never know about chemistry, right? And I think that the fact that they made this move now and gave themselves that extra month and a bit to let these guys get acclimated, to your point, Eric, I think that's also really significant that, you know, there's now not a situation where you're putting them in the last possible time to bring them into an organization. Instead, you've got now the entire month of February, the entire month of March, and into April for these guys to get comfortable, as opposed to the few weeks remaining that you've got when you get to the trade deadline. I think there's a lot of significance in that as well.
Yep. I agree. These guys have plenty of time over the next little while to figure out the lines and who plays best with who and where you're going to put Zeri and all these other things. My column just got posted on Sportsnet with my chats with Frost and Farabee. There's some kind of interesting things that they had to say in there, but one of them is that, Morgan Frost, you know, I guess you'd say this no matter what, but he said he's very open to the possibility of extending with the Calgary Flames. I mean, that's not going to be a shocker. That's not breaking news. Everybody's going to say that, whether they mean it or not. But I don't see any reason why a good Canadian kid whose father is actually quite famous. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Do you know who Andy Frost is?
I don't know
if many people in Calgary know who he is.
He's the... Well, and it's funny, as soon as this trade was made, I noticed a couple new followers on my Twitter account, and Andy Frost would be one of them. And it's been going, like, the history he has with the Toronto Maple Leafs and being the in-house voice, it's a pretty cool hockey family, hey?
Yeah, Andy Frost is a household name in Toronto. He's hosted the post-game show on radio for a lot of years. You know, he's recently retired, but also one of only three men who have ever been the PA announcers for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, that's an incredible claim to fame, I think, for over 30 years. And I talked to Morgan a little bit about his dad. But, you know, again, a kid from Aurora, Ontario, I don't see any reason to think that he's not going to want to play in Canada. He's excited, he said, to play in Canada. Farabee is going to find it very interesting to go somewhere where it's this cold, in his eyes anyway, and also in another country because he's never played in Canada. So he's locked up for 3 years, so there's nothing he can do about it anyway. But Frost will have something to say about it. And listen, if he gets the opportunity that he's excited about right now, that everyone thinks he's going to, there's no reason why he wouldn't extend.
Well, and I mean, restricted free agent. So, I mean, the very least, like, the Flames
one more
have
year.
All the control there, right?
That's what I guess I'm saying is not just 1 year. You're hoping, obviously, the Flames don't want to just sign him to a one-year bridge deal. They want to sign him to 2 or 3 or 4 years. And because you've made this trade so far ahead of the trade deadline, you've got even more of a sample size to adjudicate before you actually make that decision on how long you want to keep him.
Yeah, it's an interesting acquisition. It's an interesting look the Flames are going to have, and I think that we can all agree that this team has gotten a little better in the immediacy, and also could be a team that, with this trade, makes him a little bit better going forward as well. It's the Eric Francis Hour. He's Eric Francis. My name is Pat Steinberg. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us every Friday for a full hour here on Flames Talk. And this hour of Flames Talk is coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk.
Well, we'll come back and continue talking about the news of the day, which, of course, is this huge trade the Flames pulled off on Thursday night. But another huge trade has been pulled off on Friday, and we'll dive in a little bit on that. That, of course, being the deal that sees JT Miller now officially a member of the New York Rangers. That and more when we come back. It's Flames Talk and the Eric Francis Hour on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric joins Flames Talk from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca like he does for a full hour every Friday. Apparently Craig Conroy has set off a domino effect, EF. The long-rumored JT Miller trade has been completed. So, and this is... You know, we just spent a good half hour talking about all the implications of the Flyers-Flames trade from Thursday. Now here we are on Friday, and the team that the Flames are fighting tooth and nail with, or one of the teams the Flames are fighting tooth and nail with in this Western Conference Pacific Division playoff fight, just made a huge trade themselves. The Vancouver Canucks have sent JT Miller, along with Eric Brännström and Jackson Dorrington, to the Rangers in exchange for Filip Hedl, Victor Mancini, a first-round pick, top 13 protected in this year's draft, no salary retention, and the Canucks get out from all of JT Miller's cap hit. So the Canucks traded away one of their best players. We knew it was coming. We knew it was untenable with JT and the Vancouver Canucks. But they just opened up a whole slew of cap room. They got more assets. I am really curious what this means for the Vancouver Canucks now.
Oh, I'm with you. I debate back and forth as to whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing for, you know, vis-a-vis the Calgary Flames. Like, they traded away their best player. I think they picked the wrong guy to move out of town myself, but I'm not there every day. I don't know the dynamics of where that's at, who's picking whose side in that dressing room. And I know that the Patterson contract was basically pretty much untradeable. So I guess that pretty much makes your decision easier. A lot of teams would want to add a guy like JT Miller with the way he plays and so hard and he's such a leader. But so now the Vancouver Canucks are devoid of their best player and one of their main leaders. Like, I would argue, I'd go as far as to call him like the heartbeat of that team. But it does free them up theoretically of the drama. Like, now potentially they could start to just move forward with this new life without JT Miller and the drama that, that came with him being there. So I don't know if it's a good thing or bad thing. I remember talking to Husk about it. I think he said it to you guys too, like him saying, "Oh, just I love this drama going on in Vancouver. It's great to watch. We'd love them to keep it going because it has affected their play this year."
Well, obviously, he basically said
last year.
He basically said to that point, Eric, like, we dealt with that last year, and it really affected us. Like, that's the team we're fighting with. We'd love to see it continue because it does affect you. And it felt like, because of that, it felt like only a matter of time until the Canucks did something. But what's really interesting is that they got the Rangers to do this without salary retention. And the Canucks got a decent player. I think Filip Hedl's still got some upside. But what's super interesting now is the fact that they got out from the entire contract and they got that first round pick. Like, do they do something similar to what they did a few years ago when they traded Bo Horvat and didn't get, like, they quote unquote lost the best player in that Horvat trade, but used the first round pick they got in it to go out and acquire Filip Hronek in that same year. And Hronek obviously is a massive part of what they're doing. Like, do the Canucks have something like that in them? And is that now an option for them with another first round pick? Like, is that a first round pick the Canucks are using at the draft, or is that a first round pick the Canucks are using to try to go get something else to make up for the loss of JT Miller?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I mean, making moves this year to try and help your team in the short term, I'm not sure, you know, time will tell whether or not that's something that makes sense. And they'll be watching to see how their team responds now that this drama has potentially been ended. Yeah, it gives them, you know, potentially some options. And boy, oh boy, like, look, that to me is a very good team on paper. It hasn't been a great team on ice. But to me, it's been fascinating to watch them. Like, I'm not sure there's a more interesting team to watch this year with all the drama and the storylines. But Kevin Lankinen, to me, saved their season early by being this incredible, almost like a martyr, and the way he stepped in with Demko being out. And it seems like Quinn Hughes has kind of been saving them of late, like winning games almost single-handedly. And now that this drama's gone, I wonder who's going to step up next. I guess at some point, shouldn't Pettersson step up? That's kind of the crux of the whole problem here in Vancouver. If he steps up and starts playing better now that this drama's over, boy, watch out. Then the Flames really will have a handful in terms of trying to stave off the Canucks.
I love it. I just... That's 2 days in a row with significant trades made, and this one feels like it was a long time coming, but that's a significant deal. And JT Miller goes back right back where it started. The Canucks potentially get out from, as you mentioned, the drama. We'll see if it ends up being something that helps them or if it hurts them. And maybe Vancouver has already conceded they might not make the playoffs this year and is looking for the future. Or maybe they still have eyes on doing something between now and the trade deadline to help them. I don't know. But, yeah, it's this. And then the Kings continue to struggle mightily. They can't score right now. And so they've left the door open for both Vancouver and Calgary to track them down after having a large lead. Like, this is going to be a really interesting fight to the finish, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. And did I not see last night that the Flames are only three back of Colorado with a couple games in hand?
For the other wild card spot, too.
Yeah, like, you know, dare we sit here and even think about the possibility of the Flames, you know, hanging with a juggernaut like Colorado. But, you know, I don't think we call Colorado the juggernaut we used to. But they don't have anywhere near the depth they used to have. You know, they're kind of like a two-headed monster. They used to be three, but now they're two-headed monster. Interesting. I love it. You know, and again, talking on radio this week to the people in the East, they're like, you know, it just kills me. They're like, yeah, well, we haven't really been paying too much attention to the race in the West. It's not as exciting as the one in the East. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. they're all pretty good, just so you know. Like, there just happens to be more teams involved in that race in the East, sure. But doesn't mean it's a better race. I mean, this is a hell of a race here that we're going to be watching from now to the end of the year. And you know what? Someone pointed out to me, talking to Steve Koulias about this, and he's so sharp. He looks at things that most people don't look at. He said eight games left the Flames have against Seattle, Anaheim, and San Jose. And he says, like, you know, when you only have, what is it, 30-whatever games left the Calgary Flames have, when 8 of them are against, like, bottom feeders like that, and Seattle has kind of fallen out of it, man, that can make a difference. And the Flames have done well to beat those bottom feeders this year, unlike past years where they've kind of really struggled against the Chicago. So maybe that's a real good sign, too, that, you know, they've played well against those teams and they still have a lot of those games left.
I believe I saw it because I was not usually on home games. It's tough to pay too much attention to the Sportsnet telecast to begin with because there's so much going on with what I'm doing. But I believe I saw on the Sportsnet telecast as you were doing kind of your prep graphics, because we have access to kind of the program feed before everything goes live. And I believe there was a strength of schedule type graphic that was put up, and kind of all the teams in the mix. Feels like the strength of schedule looks pretty even, which just makes the whole conversation that much more interesting. So which teams take advantage most of those bottom feeders that they've got left on their schedule? And you're right, this is a kind of abnormal year when it comes to the Flames, because generally this is a team, you're right, that struggles with those bottom feeding teams. They've done pretty well against them this year, including another win over Anaheim on Thursday night that I know that we were all focused on and didn't miss a single second of.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I laughed. I said, if this trade falls through, I can't write a column because I haven't watched much of this game at all. I do think that it was interesting that as this trade's going on and they're trying to acquire some guys that are going to help them in the future, that, you know, two other guys that are a big, well, one for sure is a big part of the future, and the other one's just big and probably part of the future, is Klapka and Coronado putting on, you know, having huge nights. And, man, like, I'm not going to say they have an embarrassment of riches here, but, yeah, the Calgary Flames just continue to stockpile all these young options that really you wonder which ones are going to really take and be the cornerstones moving forward and which ones are going to fall by the wayside. But the more lottery tickets you have, the better chance you're going to have, you know, more of these guys are going to be real, real cornerstones.
We didn't address the biggest story of Thursday night, and that was Blake Coleman stealing Matt Coronado's hat trick. We didn't. Maybe we can do that next week. And the implications, the locker room implications of that blatant theft. I'm just kidding. He clearly He clearly tipped the puck when you go look at it. It was a light one, but he did get a tip on that. The eventual game winning goal.
But you also, you know, you use the word steal. The organization stole all those hats. What about people who want to get their hats back? I'm kidding. It was a fun night, wasn't it?
Get out of here, buddy. We will do it again next week. Thank you, EF.
See you, my man. Well, have a great week. Well, we'll see you tomorrow. Cheers.
Maybe. I'll see you tomorrow. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us every week. It's the Eric Francis Hour, and you can get Eric on Twitter at Eric Francis. Catch him in intermissions on Sportsnet West and Sportsnet Flames telecast, and of course at Sportsnet.ca as well. Thanks to Connor Gronsdahl, our outstanding producer. It's also the final day of intern Anand. Thanks for helping us out this hour here on Flames Talk. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.